Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is Amy Newmark, the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy and I will be discussing Chicken Soup's latest release, Touched by an Angel. The book is a collection of 101 miraculous stories of faith, divine intervention, and answered prayers. Good morning, Amy. Welcome back to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I am great, and thank you for having me back again. I love doing this show.
I'm always excited to have you hang out with us in the kitchen.
That's right.
Touched by an Angel is a delightful read. I really connect with several of the stories, and I really enjoyed the book very much. Exceeded my expectation because I didn't know what to expect in terms of stories shared by other people. I'm so glad that Chicken Soup put this book together because it really gives everyone to connect with stories with someone else. There are really no other books out there that has a compilation of wonderful stories like this that touches the heart and moves the soul. Congratulations.
Well, thanks. You know, we did it because we had put out a book 2 years ago called Chicken Soup for the Soul, Angels Among Us. Mm-hmm. And that was the first book we had ever put out on angels in our, you know, 19-year history at that time. Mm-hmm. And that book did so incredibly well. We sold a couple of 100,000 copies in like 3 months.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a really big bestseller. And I thought, we have so many more stories that people are sending us about angels. Let me do another one.
Mm-hmm.
And this one with the touched by an angel theme, you don't have to have seen an angel. It could just be that somehow there's been some kind of divine guidance,
mm-hmm.
even if it's just some really strong intuitive feeling inside you. But it's more like a touch. You were just
mm-hmm.
touched by some kind of angelic or divine guidance, even
mm-hmm.
though you don't know where it came from, which means that it works really well for people, even if they don't believe in specific religions or they don't
right.
specifically believe in angels, but they believe there's something awesome out there that helps
yeah.
them get through their lives.
That's wonderful. Gabrielle Bernstein wrote a wonderful foreword for the book. Please tell us about her.
So Gabrielle, mm-hmm. She is really well known in this whole area of spiritualism, divine intervention, divine guidance, listening to your inner voice. And I was really thrilled to get a foreword from her because I feel that she reaches everybody, religious or not, because she just talks about this common human experience of knowing that somehow times of need.
Mm-hmm.
And so she calls it like a loving energy that guides her and helps her decide what to do. And she said, you know, some people call it an energy of love, some call it spirit, some call it a higher power or God,
mm-hmm.
some call it angels. But it's something that you need to listen to, even if you don't really know what it is. Sometimes you just have that little voice inside you that's telling
mm-hmm.
you what to do. And so the amazing thing was that she picked up the manuscript that I sent to her when she was deciding if she was going to write the foreword. And the very first story in the manuscript was a story about somebody who she knows really well, who she's very fond of. And so she said she instantly knew that she had to write the foreword for this book. And later on, you and I are going to talk about that first story.
Mm-hmm.
And you're
mm-hmm.
going to see just how cool this whole thing is. There are so many weird connections that came about because of this book, all revolving around that first story in the book. So she says that this book sent chills through her as she read the stories, and that this book reminds you to listen to that inner voice, to listen to whatever guides you in your life,
mm-hmm.
whether you believe it's angels, another divine kind of presence, just amazing intuition, ESP, whatever it is, listen to it. And we have so many examples in the book of times when people listen to that inner voice or to that weirdly appearing out of nowhere divine guidance, and then what ends up happening because they listened. So it's really awesome to have a foreword from her, because what she believes in is exactly what this book is about.
Wonderful. Why do you think people believe in angels?
I think because people do get guidance in some way, that it's very common to believe that those come from an angel, whether you think an angel takes a human form, like it's this stranger who helped you change your tire and then disappeared in the blink of an eye, or whether you think it's just an inner voice. Whatever your definition of angel is, everybody seems to have a story about some amazing thing that's happened to them where they were guided or assisted in some way, and they can't really figure out how did that happen. And so we ended up getting thousands of stories about that for this book, which is why the book came out so well, because we had thousands of stories to pick from, and we only could publish 101.
Yeah, and that's a shame, because I'm sure there's so many other wonderful stories as well.
Yes, that's one of my favorite parts about working on this book, was that I got to read so many great stories.
Yeah.
But of course, that was one of the challenges, because you hate turning down a story from somebody, a heartfelt story where they're telling you about this incredible thing that happened to them, and they're finally putting it in writing for the first time. Sometimes they say, I never believed anything like this could ever happen, and I was embarrassed to tell people, but now I'm writing it down. And then we didn't publish their story, but you know, we got so many, and often they were on the same theme. So we could only pick a few on each kind of theme.
Yeah. What I like about it, the fact that you're saying it's on the same theme, that shows the validation that, in my mind, angels exist, or there's some higher power out there that sort of guides us along our daily lives. As I mentioned earlier, chicken soup had given each and every one of us to have that opportunity to hear someone else's experience that validate our own personal experience. And that's just wonderful, because there's really no book out there that does justice in terms of connecting with the masses from the various different stories.
That's true, because people will read this and say, I told you that butterfly was a message from Dad, or, you know, I told you that an inner voice told me to make the phone call at that time.
Right.
And it also, I find that this kind of book really helps people who are grieving, because it gives them validation that there is an ongoing connection with their loved ones, because so many stories are about some kind of experience, saying goodbye to a loved one who has just passed on in a dream, or knowing to visit a loved one right before the end. But it really does validate that even from beyond, they can have a connection with this person. And so a lot of people tell us that these kinds of Chicken Soup for the Soul books have really helped them as they go through the grieving process for someone they love.
Wonderful. Did you experience an angelic guidance in putting the book together?
I think that there's always a bit of guidance that goes on, because how do I come up with these ideas and then pick the right stories and shape them into the right chapters to connect with people? I mean, something's going on, because this book immediately went on the self-help bestseller list. It came out on October 7th, and with just 4 days of selling, it hit the BookScan self-help bestseller list. I think that that's really remarkable. And so somehow, whether it's my intuition or whatever it is, something is helping me to really reach people and create these successful books.
Wonderful. Congratulations on that news. What would you like the readers to gain from reading Touch by an Angel?
I think that this book will give people hope. And hope is a really important thing. A lot of people tell me, I need hope. And this book gives you hope because it shows you that miraculous things can happen to everybody out of the blue. And sometimes you just have to open your eyes to see that there are miraculous or awesome things happening in your life. You have to be open-minded and open to receiving these things. And so I hope that this will help readers to get that hope, to really open their eyes to what's going on around them, to listen to their inner voice and trust their inner voice, because that inner voice is often telling you the right thing that you should be doing, even if other people are telling you something different. And I think this will also help readers to listen to stories from other people and be more open-minded about accepting the validity of other people's stories.
So true. Let's get into the various stories. I've selected several stories from the book as talking points for this morning. Please give us a quick rundown of these stories and their authors.
So the first story in the book is the one that I told you really had an effect on Gabby Bernstein. And I have to say, I really believe that Chicken Soup for the Soul, Touched by an Angel, is worth reading just to read this first story. This first story is so cool in so many different ways. So it's written by Natasha Stoyanov, who is a well-known author in the whole spiritual space. And she talks about how she was very friendly with Norris Mailer. Norris Mailer was the wife of the famous author Norman Mailer. And Norris was obsessed with the movie Gone with the Wind. And Natasha was obsessed with it too. They became great friends. Norris had an antique Scarlett O'Hara doll that her husband had given her. And Natasha could basically recite the entire script of Gone with the Wind, all 4 hours of it. She could do every single part. So they were really meant for each other as friends. Mm-hmm. And so Norris gave Natasha the nickname Miss Scarlet, and Natasha gave Norris the nickname Miss Melanie. And when Norris got cancer and knew that she was going to die, she and Natasha discussed how she would send a message back to Natasha from beyond. And she said that she would use the word Scarlet. And that's not a name you hear very often in real life.
Right.
So Norris ended up dying with Natasha sitting at her bedside holding her hand. And Natasha's very friendly with John Edward, the psychic medium. And John Edward said to Natasha, "Don't worry, you'll get your code word Scarlet when the time is right." And so 3 years passed, and Natasha still hadn't gotten the code word Scarlet. And then Natasha was having a super busy summer, last summer, the summer of 2013, and she was on insanely tight book deadlines. She had 6 weeks to write a memoir for a celebrity, because she does a lot of ghostwriting for celebrities. And she got a call from an editor at Hay House, and the editor said, "You have been specifically recommended to do this book. You have to do this book. It's about one of the mothers who lost her child in the horrific Sandy Hook school shooting, and you need to help this mother write a memoir, because she's been getting all of these signs from heaven from her son." And Natasha was saying, "No, I do not have time to do this. I have this other book that I have to do in the next 6 weeks." And the editor said, "Please, just give her a call. You'll love her. Her name is Scarlet." And Natasha said, "What? Her name is Scarlet?" So she said, "Okay, I'll talk to her." So she called Scarlet, and Scarlet was telling her about the messages she was getting from her son, Jesse. And then Scarlet said, "Do you believe in signs?" And Natasha said, "Well, yes, I do. That's why I called you, because your name is Scarlet," and told her about the whole thing with Norris Mailer. And there was a pause, and then Scarlet said in a very shaky voice, "Natasha, your friend Norris, is that Norris Church Mailer?" And Natasha said, "Yes." And Scarlet said, "My mother is here with me. She just finished reading your friend Norris's memoir, A Ticket to the Circus." which is pretty oddly coincidental, you know?
Right.
And so Natasha said, Scarlett, it seems I'm writing your book. Now, the problem was she was supposed to write Scarlett's book in the next 6 weeks, but she already had another book she had to write in the next 6 weeks. So she said yes, but this was basically impossible for her to pull off. That, a few minutes later, her phone rang, and it was the person she was writing the first book for.
Mm-hmm.
And the person said, Natasha, I'm sorry, something's come up. I have to go out of town for 6 weeks. So we have to put the book on hold for 6 weeks until I get back. And now Natasha had her 6 weeks that she needed to do the book for Scarlett. So it was just a really awesome story. And Gabby Bernstein knows Scarlett from Sandy Hook. And so it just all was a wonderful circle of people knowing each other. So I love that story. And I thought it was very, very interesting. And, you know, there were odd coincidences in so many different ways in that story.
What's beautiful about that story is that if we allow ourselves to just stay in the moment, it's like all these answers are revealed right in front of us. It's like being a Monday morning quarterback right now and having all those things fall in. Had she said completely no and not do it, this sort of chain reaction will not take place. Maybe it would in a different way, but it did in this particular way, and that's just wonderful.
And later on in this hour, near the end of this hour, I'm going to tell you about even more of the chain reaction that came from this story, but I'm going to save that for later.
Wonderful, wonderful. The next story is from chapter one again, is Messages from Heaven. This is really sort of close to my heart. The story is The Morning Cloak by Maria Bernard.
So what I like about this story is that it talks about butterflies, and butterflies are such a common theme. And sure, you could say butterflies are always around, but sometimes really strange things happen with butterflies. And in the case of this story, this woman's mother was in the process of passing away from congestive heart failure. She had just moved into hospice care, and her daughter was absolutely exhausted, and she and her husband decided that they would go and look for a little lake house that they could relax at. And so they were out touring a property that they ultimately purchased. And as they were walking around, it was very early spring, so a little early for butterflies, a black butterfly basically dive-bombed her. And it wouldn't leave her alone. It kept circling her. Then it came back and sat on her shoulder while she was talking to the realtor. And the realtor said, well, the butterfly must be attracted to your perfume. But Marla wasn't wearing any perfume. And that was a Saturday. By Monday, her mother was really weak. And Marla went to visit her mom. And then she came home and she was talking to her husband, giving him an update. And she looked out their living room window, and there was a black butterfly again. And the butterfly just kept showing up. Then when her mom died, her family gathered at her house, and a large black butterfly appeared outside their family room window where they were all assembled and kept hitting the glass and bouncing off the glass as though it was trying to get in. The next day, Marla went out to do some errands. She actually had to buy some dress pants for her grandson to wear to the funeral. And she was in the store looking for the pants for a funeral, and she sees this perfect white dress that's decorated with black butterflies. And she said, oh my gosh, I have to wear that to the funeral. And then all of a sudden, this black butterfly necklace was just in front of her in the store that went perfectly with the dress. So she started doing a little research about black butterflies, and she found that in the Philippines, a lingering black butterfly is taken to mean that someone in the family has died or will soon die, exactly what happened with her. And so she says now it's a year later when she's writing the story, and this black butterfly has once again appeared in her window, and she takes a lot of comfort in having the black butterfly nearby because she feels it's a connection now to her mother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful story. I had the same experience in terms of a different colored butterfly. I've shared this with you before, and now for the first time I'm sharing this on the air. This story struck a personal chord in me in terms of when my mom passed away a year ago in Malaysia, and I was there during the mourning period, during the wake actually. I saw this beautiful, gentle white butterfly that hang out with me and with my sister. We both experienced this during the mourning period, during the wake period at different times. No one else really actually saw the butterfly, but when we compared notes, my sister and I were able to validate one another in seeing this beautiful, gentle butterfly that was with us. We know that our mom's spirit was with us during that time.
Yeah, that's a really good story. And we definitely hear these a lot. There's something to these butterfly stories.
Yeah, yeah. The next story is from Chapter 2, A Gift from an Angel. The story itself is titled The Gift by Johanna Richardson.
So this is one of my favorite stories in the book, so I'm so glad that you like it also.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those stories that says to you, you have to listen to those inner voices, because this woman, Johanna, was driving home from work. She had just put in a 16-hour day. She was exhausted. And a little voice kept saying to her, go visit grandmother in the nursing home. This was her husband's grandmother, who she was very close to. The nursing home was an hour away, not at all in the direction of Joanna's house. And it was really late. She was going to get to the nursing home after 11 p.m., when you're not even allowed to visit and nobody was going to let her in. But she just couldn't get over this little voice, so she drove to the nursing home, rang the bell, and against the rules, they let her in. Her grandmother was so to see her, and as soon as she got into her grandmother's room, Johanna said that this anxious feeling just fell away and was replaced by a real feeling of warmth. So she hugged her grandma, started talking to her. Her grandma asked how her husband was, and all of a sudden, her husband was in the doorway. Now, her husband had been working, too. He's a police detective, and he had been working on a project and was on an extra shift, again, an hour away from the nursing home. And in the middle of his shift, he had felt this compulsion that he couldn't shake, and he actually had asked for special permission to take 3 hours off for personal matter, and he drove to the nursing home in the middle of the night. And he was going to have to go back to work and finish his shift. And so they visited with the grandmother, and then finally they said, well, we really have to go. It's so late. And the grandmother said, couldn't you stay a little longer? And they said, we really can't. And the husband had to go back to work. And Johanna drove home. She gets home, and she gets a phone call that the grandmother has died. She went to bed and fell asleep, and she died in her sleep hours after they saw her. So they were stunned and heartbroken, but they were also so deeply grateful that they had listened to those inner voices, and they had both had what she calls a highly unusual guided experience. And so I think it's a wonderful lesson to listen to your intuition, mm-hmm. or that inner voice, or however you're getting messages about something you have to do, because
yeah.
you don't want to be put in a position of saying, if only. I mean, I've spent
right.
my whole life trying to avoid those if-only moments, right? And they listened to
yes.
the inner voice, and they avoided one of those if-only moments.
So true. You're right when you talk about us not really listening to our inner voices. There are directions that are given to us consciously, in a way, and subconsciously, and a lot of times we brush them off because we always put it off for another day. I've learned over the years not to do that, because I've experienced a couple of times situations like that where upon finding out someone's about to pass or something of that nature, well, let me be more specific in this case. My ballroom instructor mom, for example, when I found out that she was about to pass, it took me 3 days to get to her, and I did, and there was just a sense of peace to know that I was there and she knew that I was there. And then the most recent situation is when my mom passed away last year, when I got the call from Malaysia. The fastest way I could get there is 3 days by the time you talk about flying and changing planes and whatnot and so forth. from the time I got on the plane, I was at complete peace. I don't know why, but I felt that sense of comfort. And seems like my mom was with me all through the time to the period where we brought her home, and me being there and having seen her personally taking her last breath in front of me, it was just a moving experience. And I'm so thankful that the inner voices are keeping me at peace and telling me, sort of guiding me, basically, in a nutshell.
Yes, I think it's really important. I try to listen to my intuition a lot. And sometimes I'll say to somebody, look, I don't know why I'm disagreeing with you. I don't know why I'm being so forceful in my conviction about something, but I can't tell you why, but something inside me knows. And then later I might be able to come up with a more specific reason, but I've learned if something's bugging me, I have to go with it. If it's keeping you up at night, you have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because somehow, even if you don't understand why you're feeling that way, subconsciously you are making a very important decision and you have to go with it.
So true. The next chapter is a wonderful chapter, and it's titled An Auspicious Visitor. The first story in this particular chapter that I chose is The Best Man by Michelle Boom.
Yes, thank you for choosing this, because two of our four children got married in the last few months, so I'm very into weddings right now. And we also went to two other weddings. We've been to four weddings in a very short period of time. So I love weddings. But this one, it was sad because this couple was getting married, and the groom, his brother had died at only the age of 20 in an accident. And the groom said, I just can't appoint anyone else best man because it was supposed to be my brother. So they decided that they wouldn't have a best man. And the groom appointed his three brothers-in-law to serve as ushers and to stand up at the front with him. And so the afternoon of the wedding, the bride is walking down the aisle and she sees the groom at the front with the three groomsmen, and she sees the bridal party. And the three groomsmen, even though they were told exactly where to stand and there were little X's where they were supposed to stand, they're too far away from the groom. There's a whole space between the groom and the first groomsman. Like a person could fit in that space. And she was kind of gesturing to her brother, like, move over. And he just waved back. He thought she was waving. So she gave up. And so they had the wedding that way. The bridesmaids stood in a nice, neat row next to her, the bride. But then there was this visible gap between the groom and the three groomsmen. And when they got the photos back later, they saw that where that gap was, that a whole person could have fit in, there was this distinctive patch of sun on the grass, even though it had not been a fully sunny day. There was this big patch of sun right where the best man would have stood. And so her husband said, I guess someone made the event after all, and really felt that his brother had been there in some way with him.
It's a beautiful story. The next one is The Doctor by Catherine Cobb.
So this is a really, really spooky one. this woman talks about when she was a girl, and she was very, very sick. And this was back in the 1950s when doctors still made house calls. Her dad was calling the doctor's office, but there was no reply, and this girl was getting sicker and sicker, and her dad kept calling the doctor's office and leaving a message with the answering service, and then finally there came a knock at the front door, and a doctor appeared, not their regular doctor, but a substitute appeared, and so he came in and he said that she had appendicitis, and it was really bad. It wasn't the normal thing where people are, you know, in and out quickly. She was actually in the hospital for a long time. She almost died. She was in an oxygen tent. Days went by after the emergency surgery. And after she had been there for a couple of days, their regular doctor came into the room, and he looked absolutely shocked. He had had no idea that this had happened to her. He had been on a trip, and he hadn't received the messages from the answering service till he got back. There had been no doctor on call that night to substitute for him. No one had ever heard of the substitute doctor who had shown up at their front door. He just didn't exist. And so they've never figured out who was this doctor who miraculously appeared when they needed him to make a house call and who made sure that, her parents took her to the hospital so that her life could be saved.
It's just something that only can happen magically. It's like a guardian angel just show up as a doctor.
I know. See, this is why when I was making the book, you know, people say, well, how do you know the stories are true? Well, I don't, but I can see, even when somebody's telling a story that sounds unbelievable, you can feel the sincerity of the person who's telling the story.
Right.
That this happened. They can't explain it either. They would probably think if someone else told them the story, well, how could that possibly have happened? But
these
weird stories for us. So we present them to our readers to open their minds to the possibility that awesome things do happen, and we don't know why.
Well, it's a wonderful, wonderful story. The next chapter is even more wonderful. It's about miracles happen. And the first story is Saving Mallory by Marilyn Ellis.
So Marilyn had married her husband when they each had young children, and Marilyn's son, Jay, had become very friendly with her new husband's son, daughter, Mallory. So Jay and Mallory, like, grew up as siblings. They were step-siblings, but they really grew up as siblings because their families were joined at such a young age. And we opened the story with Mallory in the hospital with a brain thing called an AVM, which if it ruptures can cause a stroke. And so she's in the hospital and they're going to try to do emergency surgery, and things do not go well at all. And Mallory is on the verge of death. She's a teenager and she's about to die. And the horrible thing was that Marilyn's son Jay had already died. This would have been the second child in their blended family to die. So it was just a horrible situation, and Marilyn often took refuge in meditating, and while she meditated, she visited her late son, Jay, and she had this special place where she visited him. It was a hillside in a meadow with grass and flowers, and there was a stream running through a forest at the bottom of the hill, and she would meditate, and she would visit her son in her meditation in this lovely place. So she started visiting him every day in this lovely place while she meditated. And he started telling her that Mallory was with him. Now, Mallory was in the hospital in a coma. And Jay was saying, Mallory's with me, but don't worry. She's just hanging out for a while, Mom. She's going to be okay, and she'll be back when it's time. And Marilyn would meditate every day and have these conversations with her late son in her meditative state.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 6 weeks of Mallory being in this limbo, the doctors gave her only a 5% chance of surviving. And Marilyn once again was talking to Jay in her meditative state. And she had always seen Mallory with Jay hanging out with a bunch of teenagers in this dream state that she went into. And this time she didn't see Mallory there anymore. And she said to Jay, where's Mallory? What happened? Because she thought maybe this is bad. Like, why was there a change? Why wasn't Mallory still hanging on? And Jay said, don't worry. Gone on about her business, Mom. And Marilyn came out of her meditative state. And a little while later, the phone rang, and her husband called and said, Mallory's waking up. And then, as Mallory came out of her coma, she talked to her stepmother, Marilyn, and she said, Marilyn, I just have to tell you, Jay brought me back. He brought me back. When I was waking up, he was there with me. He was saying, Mal, wake up now. Mal, wake up. He brought me back. So I'm getting chills just telling you this story, even though I edited
too.
It and I've read it many times. But this is the story.
Yeah.
What can I say? That this book is just full of these stories that just are awesome and give you chills.
Yeah.
So that's a great example of one of them.
Yeah, I agree. It's a wonderful book to read. But then again, it's kind of like, it's difficult to read too, in a way. You pause and you start thinking about things and you look back at the experience you have experienced in life, and then the stories give me meaning to certain things that you've experienced in life. I hope that makes sense.
Well, I think it does make you think a lot, and it is an emotional experience to read a book like this. And what's great is that since you have 101 stories, you can read a little bit, stop, go back to it the next day. Although some people say that these are like potato chips, they can't stop once they start reading A Chicken Soup for the Soul book. They just have
to keep going.
Then they go back later and they reread some of the stories, and they'll read them over and over again because the stories are very dense with meaning. I'm proud of this book. I really am. I think this is one of the most emotional and meaningful books that we have made in a long time. And I think it's really going to touch people. And I'm not really surprised that it's already on the bestseller list.
Yeah.
Because stories about people who are touched by an angel,
really
does add value to people's lives.
Sure does. As I mentioned before, having the stories compiled in one neat little book gives everyone an opportunity to reflect upon their own personal experiences, realizing that, hey, they're not alone. They need validation, so to speak. It's something that's special.
I think you're right.
It makes people
recognize the richness of their own lives.
That's correct. The next story under Miracles Happen, this is really cool. I like this. Miracle in Tow by Cynthia Zan.
So we have a lot of angel stories in the Chicken Soup for the Soul world that revolve around vehicles, you know, getting lost, breaking down, having a flat tire, being in an accident, being rescued. Lots of stuff happens on the road. So this is a great example of one of those. And in this case, you had a young couple with very little money, brand new baby, ugly old car, and it broke down in the middle of nowhere. And this was before there were cell phones or anything else. Out of nowhere, a tow truck pulls up alongside them, and this very cheerful driver hops out, gets their car ready to tow. They get in the car with him, or in the front of the tow truck with him, and then all of a sudden they realize, oh my gosh, we have no money. And so Cynthia starts scraping, you know, into her purse, like scraping up bills and loose change, and all she has is $7.56. And she's thinking, I don't know what I'm going to do when we get there. So they arrive at the destination, and she asks the tow truck driver how much they owe, and he says, oh, let's just make it $7.56. And he winks at her.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, she has no idea how he could have known the exact amount that she had, because she hadn't told him.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually tried to call to thank him later. The sign on the door of his tow truck had been Rainbow Wrecking, and she could never find a listing for a company called Rainbow Wrecking. So it remains a mystery to this day.
It's a wonderful, heartwarming story. It's funny, but yet it's beautiful in so many special ways. I don't know how else to express myself when I read the story.
I loved it, so that's why it made it.
The next chapter, My Guardian Angel, this is a wonderful story as well. The Purest Gift of Love by Jill Burns.
So this, I thought, was a great example of one of those stories about making sure that you have a final conversation with a loved one, you know, a just-in-time conversation. And often it's your intuition that makes you do that. So in this case, Jill lived far away from her parents, and her father had blacked out, was taken to the hospital. her mother called and said, your dad's dying. There was nothing they could do. His heart was failing. And so he was expected to die within days. She started calling every day to check on her father. He remained unconscious. And then one day, he had miraculously made a comeback, and he was up and lucid and talking to people. Well, we all know what that sometimes means, right? We've all seen that, where somebody becomes lucid and energetic, and it's usually the last day, and it's somehow they come out and they talk to everybody, and it's this last ditch thing where they get the energy to say goodbye to everybody, and then they die shortly thereafter. And so Jill had a pretty strong feeling that's what was happening here. She was not that excited to hear that he had made this comeback, because she knew what it meant. So he had a lot of visitors there, but Jill spoke to him on the phone. She tried to make it quick since he had visitors. And so, you know, they said they loved each other. She said goodbye to him, which is just a horrible thing to have to do. And then she hung up because she was trying to be polite, because there were other people there with him. And she immediately regretted it. How could she have been hanging up so fast, being polite? So she was. It was really, really bothering her, just bugging her. And all the reasoning in the world, she says, didn't make up for the unspoken words that she wished she had said. And she was consumed with regret. And then she started hearing this inner voice saying to her, say goodbye to your dad, he can hear you. And this voice kept saying to her, say goodbye to your dad, say goodbye to your dad, say goodbye to your dad. And so one night she stood up and she closed her eyes and she said, Dad, Dad, I know you can hear me. And then she spoke to him and she told him all the things she wished she had told him on the phone. And she felt this warm, tingling sensation. And then she finished, and a few minutes later the phone rang and her mom said, your dad just passed away. And so it was a pretty incredible thing, because she was having this conversation with him just as he was passing away. And it was when her inner voice said to her, you have to do this now. So I thought that was a pretty good story and a wonderful lesson for people to listen to whatever that inner guidance is.
So true. What I like about the story, it reminded me about my non-spoken conversation with my mom when I got back to Malaysia before she passed. Just having that time to connect with her, even prior to being there physically with her, seeing her laying in bed, I was able to have that sort of a mental conversation with her. And how I felt, the way I felt, the peace that came over me. And then I could see her sort of a aura, I guess, around her, that she was at peace all this time. The fact that I made it home and was there holding her hands and so forth, you never quite know how you would react and how it would cause you to react in a way. I was sort of in the stage of divine peace. I mean, I felt that we were really connected. We're having a wonderful conversation in the sense that everything is okay. It's fine. It's okay for her to leave. And she can always look after her grandsons on my sister's side of the family, and then looking out after me and my sister. And it was such a peaceful feeling, that the whole transfer process. I'm glad when I read this story, sort of reminded me of that moment-to-moment experience that I had with my mom.
Great lesson for people, because we're all going to face moments like that with our parents or other loved ones.
The next chapter is Divine Messengers. This story is very interesting. Nightfall by Kathleen Schwartz.
So Kathleen, her husband was a paratrooper, and he was out of town on a military training exercise. And all of a sudden, she got this weird feeling that she should pray. But she knew that his exercise was over hours ago, because this was nighttime and it was dark. But this voice inside her just kept insisting and insisting and insisting. So she got down on her knees and she started praying for her husband to be okay. And after she had been praying for a few minutes, the sense of crisis passed. It was 3:10 in the morning, and she was able to go back to bed and go back to sleep. And then her husband called her in the morning, and she said, did everything go okay with your jump? And he said, yeah, it was fine. We had some fog, but it was fine. She said, well, did anything weird happen? And he said, well, yeah, something strange happened after everyone jumped. We had to take our car to the edge of the drop zone and wait for some heavy equipment to land. A helicopter was bringing down a tank. Well, it was 3 in the morning when this happened. A huge tank started falling right onto the car that her husband was in. And they floored the gas to get out of the way, and it seemed like the tank hovered in the air above them, waited for them to move the car, and then it landed, and it was exactly at the moment that she had been praying. So that was a pretty cool story also.
Yeah, yeah. It's a wonderful story. I chose that story because of the many servicemen that we have and women that are serving our country right now, and I think that our prayers should go out for these wonderful, brave people.
Good idea. I always try to include military stories in all our books with the same thought process.
Yeah. The next one is My Bookstore Angel by Gail Hayden.
So Gail had just gotten out of the hospital, and she stopped in a secondhand bookshop because it was raining, and she wanted to get out of the rain, and she wanted to rest. And she just sat down in a rocking chair, and then she started feeling guilty, like, oh, I should buy something from this store just to thank them for letting me sit here for a while out of the rain. And so she didn't want to spend very much, and this clerk came up to her, and he said, I have exactly the book for you. And he handed a book to her that was only $2, which she was very happy about because she didn't want to spend very much. And she bought the book, and she took it home, and when she opened it up, a printed page fell out of it, and it was a copy of the 91st Psalm.
Mm-hmm.
And she read it, and it seemed to be exactly on target with what she was going through in her life right then, recovering from her stay in the hospital. So she started chanting it every single day to herself several times. And she felt that it really contributed to her recovery. So she went back to the bookstore sometime later to convey her thanks to this man who had helped her. And the bookstore owner said, we have never had a man working at the store ever, not even for one day as a substitute. It's impossible for a man to have helped you out and taken your money that day. But she knew that this had happened to her. And then she had a dream that night, and the man came to her in a dream, and he said, I knew the book would help you. And so she felt that she had been helped by some kind of divine messenger when she really needed it.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful story. The next section, chapter 7, Miraculous Healing. This is a wonderful story. Watched Over by Dr. Sherry Hall.
So Sherry Hall, it's funny, she is actually a singer. She's a fabulous performer, but she also has her MD, and she also practiced medicine for many years. She's really an accomplished person. She talks about the time when she was in intense pain, and it turned out that she had a kidney stone that she needed to pass, and it was incredibly painful. And she said it was the worst pain she had ever felt, you know, way worse than labor or anything else. And the pain came and went, but somebody came from her church and prayed with her, and then the pain went away, and then she noticed on her arm, there was a little white scar in the shape of a cross that she had never had before. And she tried to scratch it off, she tried to wash it off, but it was there and it had never been there before. It had come after they had been doing a lot of praying together. And then she finally got out of the hospital after the stone was removed. And the next thing she sees is clouds in the sky making a cross in the sky. And so she felt that God had been with her, and she actually wrote a song about it for her new album called Faith. Mm-hmm. And her song lyrics are, you never know who you'll meet on the street, what kind of message they might want you to see, but somehow I feel I'm watched over. And so that's what she was writing about. So that was pretty cool, and I love the fact that she gave us her song lyrics afterwards.
Awesome. The next chapter is Answered Prayers, Wilderness Angel by Paula Salisi.
So Paula was driving in a remote of Alaska, and this was before we had smartphones and GPS and all of that. She just had a little map that had been scribbled on a paper napkin for her, and she got lost. And she was on this road, like driving through the snow, and it was one of those roads that's only one lane wide. And so she didn't know what to do, so she just stopped her car and started praying. And all of a sudden, this plain brown car showed up, and this guy gets out of it, 30-year-old guy wearing a suit and overcoat in the middle of the wilderness in Alaska. And he tells her the directions, and he tells her just it's only a one-lane road, so you can't even turn around in place, but he tells her to go up a little farther. There's a turnaround. There's a wider part where she could turn around and then come back out on this one-lane road. So he tells her this. She gets back in her car. She looks in her rearview mirror. He's gone. And she's thinking, well, how could that have happened? He was facing me. He was stuck behind me on the one-lane road. Where did his car go? And so she never has been able to figure out how this guy showed up on a one-lane road, gave her the directions that saved her, and disappeared. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a pretty interesting story.
It's a wonderful story because sometimes the least amount of things that we expect to happen, and at that moment in time we just didn't think about it a whole lot, but afterwards the more and more we think about it, it's like basically impossible that could have happened.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about this book. We have a lot of stories about the impossible happening.
Yeah. Chapter 9, Divine Intervention. This is really a cool story. Thank You, Lord, by Susanna Lee.
I was so excited to get this story. This just appeared out of the blue. Susanna Lee is a very famous actress. She was really well known in the 1960s and 70s. She appeared in movies with Elvis Presley and other big stars of that time. And so she writes about the fact that she was on her way from London to Italy, where she was going to shoot a movie. And she was booked to fly to Rome from Heathrow, and she was on her way to Heathrow, and she hears this voice saying, "Do not get on this plane." And the voice said it three times. Now, she wouldn't have listened except that she was friends with Natalie Wood, and Natalie Wood had a friend who had psychic powers who had said to Susanna, "Always listen to your inner voice." So she told the driver, "I'm not getting on the plane. I don't care if you take me to the airport. I'm still not getting on the plane." She got to the airport. She told the press guy assigned to her, "I'm not getting on the plane." Everybody was having a fit. "You have to get on the plane. Reporters are waiting for you when you land in Rome. There's no way for us to call and tell anybody." You know, there were no cell phones or anything. So she just refuses to get on the plane. And so they ended up letting her take the next plane to Rome sometime later that day. When they landed in Rome, they circled first, and then when they finally landed, she saw large pieces of debris and emergency service vehicles all over the place. The plane that she was supposed to be on had crashed on landing, and a large number of people on the flight had died. And her name was still on the passenger list for the earlier plane, so everyone thought she was dead. In fact, the director was already trying to figure out who he could cast in her role. And she never told anybody why she hadn't taken the flight, because she knew they would think she was just a wacko. And so she kept quiet about it for years. And I'm very happy that she told us the story in our book. I feel honored to have been given this story by Susanna Lee.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story. It's a wonderful story. These are stories that from time to time you do hear people stepping up and saying, "You know, I had this sort of feeling, instincts, that I should not make this trip, take the second one, second plane, second whatever that is, because something is about to happen." And lo and behold, the time is not up yet.
Yeah, my father was supposed to be on the Pan Am flight that crashed in Lockerbie, Scotland after it was blown up. And he was going to have to really rush to the airport to make that flight.
Yeah.
And so he said, I'll just stay in London another night. And we didn't know, though, because it was before cell phones. We all thought that he had been on the flight. And then we got a call from him hours later saying it wasn't on the flight. So I always felt like there was a reason. You know, we got all these extra decades with him. He's still alive. Yeah. So,
it's amazing. The last story is from Chapter 10, Renewing My Faith. And I don't know whether to laugh or to celebrate, but it is a beautiful story. Renewing my faith.
This is another airplane story.
Yeah.
So, and I've actually, he sent us photos of this. So what happened was Alton Houseworth, he had a dream one night that he went up flying with this friend of his who had a plane, and that they crashed. And they didn't die, but they did crash, and he dreamt about exactly what happened. He saw oil on the windshield, that it took about 5 minutes for the plane to actually, you know, go all the way down. They went through some pine trees. They landed nose first, but they were okay, and they got out of the plane, and they were looking at their crashed plane. So he said, I'm not going on a plane with my friend Clarence for a while. And he finally got up the courage to tell Clarence. And so Clarence said, fine, don't fly with me. And so he actually drove to meet Clarence for a business meeting one time. And, you know, he avoided going with Clarence. And then one trip that he avoided going on with Clarence, maybe thinking about this dream he had had, actually did not an emergency landing, but a cautionary landing at an airport he wasn't supposed to land at because the weather was bad. And so this guy thought, all right, that's Clarence's almost crash. He avoided it because of my dream. So now I can get on a plane with Clarence. He gets on a plane with Clarence. Guess what happens? Oil on the windshield. Plane crashes. They go through pine trees. They land nose first in a clearing. They get out of the airplane. They look at the airplane, and I have the photos. So I thought that was a great one, and I've got the photos, so I know this happened. And I just thought, what an amazing dream he had, and then the exact way that he dreamt it happened ended up happening anyway.
Yeah. So pay attention to your dreams.
Exactly.
What are some of your favorite stories?
Well, I have to say, story one, that one by Natasha Stoyanov, is really my favorite. And now here I'm going to tell you the other part of the story.
Sure.
Okay? So this is my personal story that I'll share with you. That the way I came to meet Natasha Stoyanov and get that story from her was that there's a little free local newspaper that comes out in my town, and I don't often read it, and I certainly don't read like the third section of it that has, you know, reviews and things like that.
Right.
But I happened to read it, and there was a story about how Natasha had helped Scarlett write that book about the messages she was getting from her son, the one who had been killed in the Sandy Hook shooting.
Yeah.
And so I said, I want to get that story from Natasha for the Angels book that I'm working on. This was, you know, last year. Mm-hmm. And so I contacted Natasha, and she was incredibly busy and did not have time to write the story, but something told her that she should write the story anyway. So she wrote this story for us. The fact that she wrote the story for us ended up helping us get Gabrielle Bernstein to write the foreword for the book, which we were very excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, I ended up hiring Natasha to work on another book with me. We're doing a book called Chicken Soup for the Soul, Hope and Miracles, that's coming out in February of 2015. And then it gets even better than that. I realized that Natasha worked a lot with John Edward, who, of course, is very well known. And one day recently, I said, I want John Edward to write the foreword for this book, the Hope and Miracles book. And so I said to Natasha, can you get him? And she said, you're not going to believe it, but he sent me an email yesterday and said he had been thinking about me, and he knew he had to do something for me. And I just asked him if he would write a foreword for the book, and he said yes, and I hadn't even asked her yet. And so all of these cool things came about.
Yeah.
It just, this story just keeps getting better and better and better, and it all started with me reading this random story in this little free local newspaper that's distributed.
There's no accident in life, Amy.
Yeah, well, I'm happy about it because now I have this awesome book, and I got another awesome book coming out in February about hope and miracles with Natasha Stoyanov and John Edwards. So what gets better than that?
Yeah, that's fantastic. Congratulations to you on that. What is next for Chicken Soup?
We have a lot of great new books coming out. We have our wonderful, delicious food, and I know I gave you one of our soups to try, and you told me you loved it. We also have wonderful food for dogs and cats, and we're getting very active in the shelter community all over the country, helping shelters promote the adoption of dogs and cats by giving them food and our best-selling books about dogs and cats to give away to new pet parents. We also have a major motion picture in development. We have a daily talk show in development. We have a really wonderful children's talk show in development for Saturday mornings that will help kids learn values in a very entertaining way, learn tolerance, learn all of those good things that we want to see in children. So we are working 7 days a week. We have a very excited team of people here, all running at full speed, but we're doing so many great things that every day it's really fun to come to work, even if that happens to be a Saturday or a Sunday.
That's awesome. That really is. By the way, it's time for your word of wisdom. What recipe for living would you like to share with our listeners this morning?
Well, since I'm thinking so much about Chicken Soup for the Soul, Touched by an Angel, I'm going to give you some lessons that I personally learned from working on this book. One of them is listen to your inner guide. Second one is remember that angels often come in disguise. A third is don't be afraid to ask for help. A fourth is listen to your dreams and those inner voices and those intuitions. And a fifth is your angel may appear when you need him or her most.
Mm-hmm.
So take heart. When you're really in despair, that might be when one of these awesome miracles happens to you.
That's fabulous. That's fantastic. Amy, thank you for the great recipes for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio.
Thank you so much, Johnny.
Thank you. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me in 3 weeks on Tuesday morning, November 18. My guest will be author and inspirational speaker, Temple Hayes. Temple and I will be discussing her latest book, When Did You Die? 8 Steps to stop dying every day and start waking up. The book is designed for the emotionally and spiritually drained generation. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Bye-bye.